Welcome to episode 7 of Will I Ever Learn Chinese? I'm Jeanette Sekel. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about different approaches to learning styles, finding learning styles that work for you. I'm also going to look into different theories of second language acquisition, including one that is very popular, namely comprehensible input. While being kind to yourself and taking it easy and slowly, there are still ways to speed up language learning. And it's all about finding your drive, about using different techniques and combining different methods to curate your own personal language learning journey. This journey does not need to be fixed, but can vary a lot from day to day. Because I had the time and inclination, I spent time with Chinese daily. It was this daily dose of the language, listening, watching, speaking, and so on, that helped me progress very quickly. I also had a lot of fun while doing it. About 50 years ago, educational theory came up with an innovative idea that students will have individual differences in their approaches to learning, and that using the right learning style will likely make them more successful overall. In the intervening years, this approach has become popular among educators and is taken for granted by many teachers. Yet, research has shown that it may not be as simple as that. The original argument was that if you're following your preferred learning style, you're more likely to succeed. What constitutes a learning style differs from one theory to another, of course. Some theories proclaim that learners will differ in their preferences for learning modalities, such as listening, reading, taking in visual information like videos, or even physically manipulating objects, using them, such as speaking a language. When learning using your preferred style, the theories argue, you will be more successful than when using a style that is not your preference. And thus, teachers were asked to understand the preferred learning styles of their students. Wow, many teachers really struggled with this. And even when these preferred learning styles were found, studies showed that the students did not necessarily do much better than those who were learning using a non-preferred learning style. But why would some learners be more successful than others? What is it that determines whether learning will work or not? Well, usually the learners themselves will know whether something works or whether it motivates them. Careful reflection on one's learning is incredibly powerful. Is the video you're watching useful? Is it motivating you? Did you enjoy writing out sentences, feeling you were learning something? Or did you prefer the role play with the other learners? It is important to engage in different types of learning. Most importantly, though, it is that the learner feels motivated to continue. And therefore, whichever learning method is most fun, is most motivating, is probably the most useful learning method at the time. And this is where self-reflection comes in. Self-reflection is about critically evaluating your own learning, thinking back to what you enjoyed, what you felt was useful, and what was boring. Sometimes you will need to stick with one method for a while to see if it works. As long as you don't feel demotivated, just keep going. It might help to keep a diary to note down your experiences with different methods. When I was learning Chinese in the beginning, I quickly realized the advantages and shortcomings of some of these methods because I kept asking myself, does this work for me? And if not, is there maybe a better way? I always stuck with a method for a while to see if it appealed to me. I could see that there was a lot of good in some methods, and most would, at a push, have worked for me. However, since there were so many different materials and so many different methods for Chinese, I could be really picky. I could go and choose the approaches that I enjoyed the most, and discard those that did not really appeal to me as much. Or at least put the latter on a sort of slow burner to roll out later if needed. What motivated me as a beginner of Chinese was to use my gamified learning app without any outside pressure, setting my own pace. I loved seeing myself progress through the chapters. And I reflected on my language learning to date. What had motivated and demotivated me in the past? I was trying to curate a learning style for myself that would keep me going, avoiding the pitfalls of previous learning experiences. My second language learning experience started at school. Before starting 5th grade English and 7th grade French, I was highly motivated to learn these languages. I was eagerly looking in the school books my mom had just purchased in anticipation of the new school year. I read through the first few chapters, trying to imagine what the languages sounded like and how I would use them to communicate. English seemed to go pretty smoothly at first. Our teacher had quite an innovative idea, assigning us English names to use in class so that we could feel more immersed in the language. I randomly picked the name An out of the hat and proudly displayed it on my name tag. However, there was already a girl called Anna in my class, and the teacher progressed to calling her An, which really confused me since she continued to use the English names with the rest of the class. Once, she called out An and I started to answer her question, but she had aimed her question at the other An. I was very shy at the time, so it took me a few weeks to gather up my courage and ask her why she did this. She was very defensive and got incredibly angry. After this, English classes became a bit of a minefield, trying not to anger my teacher and keeping my head down. Soon the name immersion approach stopped, but at this stage, English had become my least favorite subject. We spent many hours in the phonetics lab, repeating seemingly nonsensical utterances, played on a tape, while our teacher was monitoring our progress, randomly listening in on students' performance. The rest of the time was spent with grammar exercises, usually gap-filling exercises that I did not really understand. 2 years later, I was keen to do better at French. I spent a few weeks before starting my 7th grade by reading my French book and learning a lot in the process. Yet again, though, a few weeks into the course, French had become unbearable. I had a rather strict teacher who would again set us grammar exercises in each session. And it took a few years when a different teacher came in and gave us texts to read about topics we were interested in that I started to get engaged in French. He taught us some slang, which at the time I thought was marvelous. Suddenly, I wanted to spend more time learning French. But then teachers changed again, and we went back to reading uninspiring literature and had to sit endless vocabulary tests. Despite preparing for those tests and often knowing many more words than some of my classmates, I tended to do very badly in them, mainly because I could not always get my head around the placements of those little accents, taigu, grave, and circumflex, those little marks on top of the vowels. When a word was misspelled with the wrong accent, my teacher would count it as a zero. Of course, I understood the importance of being precise and correct in one's writing, but I did not understand why, at this stage of language learning, it was so important to write out all the accents correctly. Surely that would be something to build up, eventually, after learning what the words meant in the first place. Thus, school did not really motivate me when it came to language learning. The pedagogical style of phonetic labs and grammar exercises, as well as overly strict approaches to correctness, put me off. Most importantly, though, I could not really see the reason for why I was learning the language. Learning seemed to happen in a kind of vacuum that made no sense. But as I explored earlier, as soon as I could see a reason for learning a language, I was usually highly motivated and I would put in the extra effort. What seemed to work well for me was to know that I would have to use a language in context. For example, when learning Spanish and Portuguese, I needed to learn these languages for my work because I was going to South America to work on indigenous languages, and usually the only way to work on these languages was through either Spanish or Portuguese. Yet, I also learned a number of languages that I had no initial plans for, such as Swedish and Finnish, and since then many others. In these cases, it was the learning journey I really enjoyed, seeing my progress and eventually being able to speak. And in all these cases, I was setting my own pace and I did not have any pressure to perform in a certain way at a certain time. None of these learning experiences involved exams or tests, for example. I had my own agenda and I was curating my own learning. Setting my own pace and learning for the sheer joy of learning were two important aspects. Let's look at some other examples of what motivated me, because the pace setting seemed to have an influence as well. When I was learning Arabic in my 30s, I went to an evening class, which I greatly enjoyed. The other students were equally motivated and we all got on very well. After about 2 years of learning, though, the class had to be merged with another class because, well, numbers were no longer sustainable. Some people had moved away or dropped out. The other class were learners at a more proficient level. But since most of us were really motivated, our teacher assumed that we would all be doing okay at the higher level. So he continued with the level of the class above us. I was actually quite pleased with this proposal initially because I wanted to progress quickly in my learning of Arabic. But a few classes in, I realized that I was completely lost. I really struggled to prepare for class and there was so much I did not understand. I was also working on a demanding research project at the time, so I did not really have the hours that I needed each day to catch up on my Arabic. I started to turn up to class unprepared, which further demotivated me, and eventually I dropped out. The level had been too high, the pace too fast, and I could not achieve what I wanted to. I had lost my motivation. The question of level is furthermore important because I've also experienced it the other way around. In this case, my motivation was not lost as such, but I felt less ambitious. Learning Swedish by myself as a teenager, I eventually found out that there were Swedish evening classes in my town. This was marvelous news because I was finally able to learn the pronunciation from our native Swedish teacher. And I could use my Swedish in a new setting, which I was highly enthusiastic about. At first, I had some catching up to do, as I knew a lot of grammar and vocabulary, but was not able to speak the language very well. But soon, I was at a much higher level than my classmates. I moved to the most proficient learner group, but that in turn was eventually merged with the groups below as numbers dropped. So overall, the level became relatively low. While I continued on the course, I saw it more as a backup than an outright learning course. I kept progressing much more in my own time. In all the examples just given, outside forces such as classroom settings guided my learning. This included the pedagogical approaches and the level of instruction. While I liked the interaction with other learners and teachers, I often felt very restricted in my learning. But on the other hand, my experience with Yoruba shows that learning by yourself can obviously also have hurdles. It can be demotivating when something is difficult to understand and there is nobody to ask. However, today, in the digital age, there are so many opportunities to ask for help, with most languages actually. Chances are somebody out there on the vast internet will have learned the language or speak the language and can help. And as a member of various language learning groups on social media and specific apps, I often encounter people asking very specific questions and getting answers almost immediately. Also, in the digital age, a learner can easily link up with the speaker or teacher elsewhere in the world, removing the need to be in the same place to learn a language. We can now communicate across continents without great difficulty. When I was learning a language on my own, such as Swedish and now Chinese, I enjoyed having some form of measuring stick to see how far I had progressed. What really motivated me was realizing that I was able to understand a little bit more, that I was able to speak a little bit more, that I had progressed 3 pages in my learning book, that I had moved up 2 levels in my language learning app. My preferred measuring stick was internal. I was appraising myself against myself, improving daily. Competing with myself, there was no pressure, only the enjoyment of doing better. Realizing that this was what kept me motivated, I knew how to approach learning Chinese from now on. I celebrated the small victories while being kind to myself when reflecting on things that did not go so well. For example, when I made a mistake, I would use that as an encouragement to improve without judgment. I would acknowledge the issue and work out a way to avoid similar errors in future. I also realized that there was another aspect of language learning I found greatly motivating, namely participating in the language, doing things I was already enjoying. When I studied Finnish as part of my undergraduate degree, I spent 2 summers in Finland at subsidized summer schools. At one of these, students were asked to produce a poster in Finnish on a topic they were interested in. Having watched the endless beauty of roadside wildflowers during our many coach rides along deserted Finnish roads, I decided to put together a poster on common Finnish wildflowers, listing their names and their typical habitats. I was interested in this topic already, and I was transferring my interest to a new setting and a new language. In order to put together this poster, I had to find the relevant references and read the books, which were all in Finnish. I spent a lot of time on this project, not just because I was learning Finnish, but also because I was enjoying learning about the wildflowers in this different setting, which was something that was already a hobby of mine. When learning Chinese, I realized that there were many interesting films and TV dramas, all at the tips of my fingers. Not normally watching much television, I soon realized that watching shows in the language I was learning provided a great way to relax at the end of the day. I would sit down, enjoy a show, and pick up some common words and phrases along the way. There was no pressure to understand any of it. Rather, I was letting the language wash over me, reading the English subtitles instead. This was not a pointless learning exercise. I was getting used to the sounds of the language. And also, I started to recognize some common expressions. I started listening to Chinese songs, and later I also learned the lyrics, which again opened up new vocabulary and a whole new way of remembering. I found videos that someone had put together explaining how some of these songs were played on the guitar. I watched the videos, trying to replicate playing the songs on my guitar while singing along. Again, I combined my new language with another hobby. In all of these cases, I was doing something other than just learning the language. I was doing something I was enjoying in the language. There are many other aspects of motivation that play in at later stages of language learning, and I shall be returning to these as I'm progressing through the proficiency levels. Motivation is also very different in different settings. When I lived in Denmark, my motivation for learning Danish came from the fact that I wanted to blend in. So it was very different from my motivation to learn Chinese. Motivation and interest are very personal, and people are different from one another. What worked for me may not work for you at all. In order to find the motivation to continue learning, it is important to reflect on your learning and to see what motivates you. It is trying out a range of approaches and always being open to trying other methods if those approaches are not very good or don't work very well at any one time. I know another learner of Chinese who loves Chinese television dramas set in ancient times, where actors dress up elaborately. She enjoys dressing up this way herself, and she's even learned to make elaborate hanfu, which is the dressing sense of the Han people, so this ancient dress. I have tried watching these types of dramas, but I really did not get on with them very well. While the contents were interesting, I think the language is often very ancient, and they talk about palaces and concubines and the like. Those were all things I didn't really need at the beginning of my learning journey. At least it wasn't something that motivated me very much. So in the beginning, I focused on contemporary dramas and films, not minding so much what the story is about. And as many of my Chinese friends would tell me, why are you watching those dramas? They're rubbish. Actually, I don't think so. I think some of them are very interesting. But I didn't mind so much what the content was, as long as I was immersing myself in contemporary Chinese culture and language. My fellow learner, on the other hand, does not like these contemporary series at all. She gets a lot of motivation out of watching these ancient dramas. Both of us have found our own personal preferences when it comes to immersing ourselves in Chinese. We have developed interests in the language that keep us motivated. Learning and motivation is highly individual, and there won't be a surefire method of learning a language that will work for everybody. As a learner, you have to find the approach that best suits you personally, carefully looking at your level of motivation, as well as your progression in the language. Being aware of this fact alone will be incredibly helpful when finding methods to engage in the language, both in formal learning apps or in much more informal settings, such as when watching movies. What do the experts say? Would linguists agree with these statements? There are many different approaches to language learning, and my method outlined above is subjective, again, coming from my own language learning journey. Yet, linguists agree that you have to learn a language in a range of different settings, and that motivation is incredibly important when it comes to the overall success in language learning. What happens in the language classroom today does not always reflect the newest research findings. Approaches to learning have changed considerably, especially in the digital age, where access to learning materials is much broader and access to speakers is also much easier. In the literature, a distinction is often made between formal and informal learning environments. Formal learning environments would be in the classroom. Informal environments would be in the community, perhaps even without any formal tuition. But what is formal tuition today? Would using a gamified learning app count as formal tuition? Many linguists have started to take a more nuanced view and regard these two as extremes on a scale. I have noticed that one particular approach to language learning is often recommended by polyglots, by people who have learned a lot of languages. This approach is called comprehensible input and is part of a so-called input hypothesis that was originally brought forward by linguist Stephen Krashen in the 1970s. According to this approach, language learning happens subconsciously through the presence of comprehensible input that the learner can make sense of. Whether the learner uses this input to speak is not important for learning, it is claimed. Krashen worked on the assumption that our brains are equipped with a language acquisition device, and this needs to be triggered by linguistic input to acquire language, much like what was proposed for children's first language acquisition. All the learner really needs, in this case, is comprehensible input, meaning the learner will have to understand most of what is said. There may be a few words or structures in there that the learner does not quite yet understand, but these will subsequently be acquired in the context without much difficulty. While I agree that there is a lot of truth in the basic idea, Krashen's work received a fair amount of criticism. We know today that input alone is not enough for the successful learning of a language. We also need to use what we have learned. So we need output embedded in our interactions. We need to speak the language. We need situations in which we will have to use the language to negotiate our identities as learners and speakers, where we have to apply what we have learned. Let's look at an example. Children with a German and an English parent growing up in the UK often grow up to understand both languages well, but some mainly speak English. While they have had German input, their surroundings are all in English, which is often the family language and is used with friends at school. These children subsequently grow up speaking mostly English and may struggle to speak German when required. While they have received the German input, they have developed a passive knowledge of German, they are not necessarily able to produce German actively themselves. Why is Krashen's approach so popular amongst learners? In my opinion, there is a clear advantage to learning at the appropriate level. Let's take the example of a podcast. When you listen to a podcast you don't understand, you'll soon zone out. I've heard learners of Chinese say that they were listening to podcasts a lot, but they were going over their heads. If that's the case, the podcasts are probably at a somewhat higher level than the learners are currently at. The learners are likely to get demotivated if they continue in this way. Rather, they may want to find an alternative, such as another podcast that is at the right level. There is no shame in listening to learning materials at a lower level. In this case, comprehensible input can help the learner to understand and build up language knowledge, provided it is combined with other aspects of learning. Using comprehensible input is a good way of gradually building up passive knowledge of a language. This passive knowledge can transform into active use as the learner gradually starts to speak the language. Indeed, this aspect of appropriate level chimes with many modern approaches to language learning. The right level and comprehensible input are not everything, though. I recently followed a discussion on social media about beginners watching television series in their target language. And some commentators took Krashen's approach to an extreme, and they argued that it would not be appropriate to watch television with English subtitles. Rather, learners were recommended to read children's stories that were right for their level of proficiency. To be honest, I would rather immerse myself in the language in other ways, not always understanding everything, than just reading children's stories. When watching movies with subtitles at the beginner stage, for example, it is not about understanding every word, but rather it's about getting used to hearing the language being spoken in context. We can make another comparison, as children acquiring their first language will be in a similar situation. There will be a lot of language around them that they do not yet understand, but they will eventually make sense of the chaos, and they will be motivated to learn language through the need to communicate. When I was demotivated learning English and French at school, I was surrounded by comprehensible input, and by some output too, in that I had to produce sentences in the phonetics lab, but I was not using the language to speak in any other way that gave me motivation. Today's approaches to second language acquisition, despite some big differences in the overall philosophy, are much broader and take into account various aspects of learning beyond the mere input and output. But motivation plays a key role, so maintaining motivation throughout the learning process is of high importance.